Hebrews 11, I just want to link to the last couple of verses of the previous chapter, because at the end the writer says, but we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who believe, or of those who have faith and are saved. And then that seems to trigger something in the writer's mind, faith. And this remarkable chapter follows, which is, I am very wary of the word unique. I almost never use it, and I deplore many people's use of it. But I am prepared to say that this chapter is pretty well unique. Because even though many of the Psalms have historical surveys of God's dealing with Israel, this one focuses round on people's faith in God and what resulted from that. And it's almost poetry. If you look through, by faith, it's like a chorus, it's like a theme. If this was a musical thing, there would be the theme coming back in. By faith, I counted up, managed to count up 24 times that is used in this chapter. Over and over again, it is a constant reminder, by faith, these people did these things. So, let's start looking at it. In the very first verse, now faith is being sure of what we hope for, or confident of what we hope for, and certain of what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. The words that are translated either being sure or confident, that word is a Greek word, and I make no apology for telling you that it's hypostasis, and it's a really complex word. It is an amazing word. Vine's Dictionary of New Testament Words has four different interpretations of it. It is not easy so people in different translations will have different words for it. So we've got the meaning of confidence, of substance, of assurance, underlying essence, the underpinning, the bedrock, the foundation. So faith is the foundation or the bedrock. It's not airy-fairy, weirdo thinking. It's the other way around. Faith is the bedrock of what we hope for. And it's the underlying reality that gives something its concrete existence. So things which in themselves have no existence as yet become real and substantial by the exercise of faith. And then the other word I'm going to draw your attention to is hope, elpis in Greek. We use hope quite variably, but it has a meaning of expectation. If I say, I hope the weather's going to be okay on Tuesday because I'm going to be minding the grandchildren, that's no guarantee the weather's going to be good, is it? That is not going to make the weather fantastic for minding grandchildren. But if I say, I expect the weather's going to be good, I've probably based that on something like the weather forecast. Well, you know. And so this, in Greek, it has a meaning of joyful expectation or anticipation. And so I quite like the reading in the Living Bible. What is faith of these verses? It is a confident assurance that something we want is going to happen. It is a certainty that what we hope for is waiting for us, even though we cannot see it up ahead. And so then we've got this next wonderful verse. Oh, and by the way, thank you to Anne for her wonderful photo of the Milky Way, Anne Williams. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. I don't know if you've noticed that, the wording of that. Some translations do it the other way around. The universe was made out of what wasn't visible, but the actual words, the original, goes from what is seen was not made out of what was visible. One commentator even wondered whether by faith and by inspiration and by by revelation was the author referring to atoms and neutrons and electrons that he or she couldn't possibly have known about at the time. So faith makes the difference as to how we view the universe. And in that regard, I want to read to you something that really struck me a couple of weeks ago. I read a mesmerising book called Orbital, which was the Booker Prize winning book for last year. It's about 24 hours in the life of 8 astronauts in a space capsule. It does not have, let me say, a riveting, exciting narrative. There is no amazing story, if you like, but it is quite mesmerising to read. And one of those 8 astronauts in the book is a Christian, and called Sean. So I'm going to read to you. Nell, another astronaut, wants sometimes to ask Sean how it is he can be an astronaut and believe in God, a creationist God, that is, but she knows what his answer would be. He'd ask how it is she can be an astronaut and not believe in God. They'd draw a blank. She'd point out of the port and starboard windows where the darkness is endless and ferocious, where solar systems and galaxies are violently scattered, where the field of view is so deep and multidimensional that the warp of space-time is something you can almost see. Look, she'd say, what made that but some heedless, hurling, beautiful force? And Sean, who's the Christian, would point out of the port and starboard windows, where the darkness is endless and ferocious, at exactly the same violently scattered solar systems and galaxies, and at the same deep and multidimensional field of view warped with space-time. And he would say, what made that but some heedful, hurling, beautiful force? And so, gazing at the universe around us is an amazing experience. The psalmist in Psalm 8 says, when I consider the works of your hands and the moon and the stars that you have ordained, is clearly overcome. I can remember many years ago when we camped at the Dover Caravan Park. I got up in the middle of the night to go to the toilet. It was an utterly still night with not much light pollution and utterly stunning Milky Way and the Southern Cross, whatever other stars we're able to see. Utterly stunning, absolutely quiet, nobody else up as I walked along the loo. Utterly stunning. You could only look at that in awe and wonder. And indeed, one of my favourite authors, Donald Miller, has said, there is something beautiful about a billion stars held steady by a God who knows what he's doing. They hang there, the stars, like holes on a page of music, free-form verse, silent mysteries swirling in the blue like jazz. And as I lay there, he's lying on the ground and camping, I think, it occurred to me that God is up there somewhere. And so that's what the author is writing here. We, by faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. And then we come to the first few people that are mentioned in this whole chapter, and we'll be looking at more next week. As Thomas said, Thomas, did you say 20 people? Roughly 20. So these are the first ones, and if you want to look more at their stories, they're in Genesis, from the beginning of Genesis up to about chapter 15 or 16 was where it's covered today. The first one is Abel, by faith. Abel offered God a better sacrifice than Cain did, and by faith he was commended as a righteous man. When God spoke well of his offerings, and by faith he still speaks, even though he is dead. He's certainly dead. He was killed by Cain. And what I want to look at in each of these different people is what difference did their faith make to them? In his case, it ended up leading to him dying, but it did mean that God commended him for his sacrifice. And there's a whole lots of arguments about why, but his sacrifice of something from his flock was approved by God. So it definitely made a difference, an unexpected outcome for him. Then the next one who's mentioned is Enoch. Enoch was taken from this life so he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. It says very simply in Genesis, he walked with God and he was not, which is a because God took him. He was so close to God that 1 minute he was in this life and the next he wasn't. It's as though the curtain between this life and the next was broken very temporarily. And we have a couple of other examples. We don't know where Moses was buried. It's almost like Moses just disappeared. Elijah was taken to heaven in a whirlwind, it says. And, of course, the Lord Jesus himself ascended into heaven. And so there are other examples like that. But Enoch is the first one. And then we have this very important verse, verse 6, because Enoch was commended as one who pleased God. And then the writer goes, let's think. Without faith, it's impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists. That's kind of a no-brainer, isn't it? Like, it doesn't make sense to believe in something you don't think exists. And of course, people have struggled with this over the centuries, and there are many people who would now describe themselves as either agnostic or atheist as far as God is concerned. And I'm not going to argue the case for believing in God this morning. There is a whole shelf of books in the library out there if you'd like to read one on that sort of thing. But it is important. It is important to believe. It's really important to believe in God and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. There are many examples of people who have said, in some desperation sometimes, God, if you are there, I want to know you. Or if you are there, speak to me. And God will reward that tiny step of faith in his direction. So then we have Noah, Enoch's great-grandson. I love this picture. It's from a large jigsaw puzzle that I have, 2,000-piece puzzle. This is part of it. Noah was warned about things not yet seen, and in holy fear built an ark to save his family. You know what struck me when I was looking for pictures and then I decided I'd do this jigsaw one? How many of the pictures that are available on the internet of Noah are basically cartoon-type things for kids, as though it's a kind of funny story, but we don't really have to believe it. It was really noticeable that of all the ones I looked for, that Noah's cartoony sort of pictures were 10 times as many as anybody else's. So Noah, one of the really big outcomes for him was the ark, as we've already heard. This was a huge step of faith. Many commentators believe that there had not been rain as we experience it before the flood. And so to build an ark over a period of more than a century is pretty weird. Pretty weird, especially in a country where you're actually not near any sea or lakes or the Mediterranean or anything like that. And so it was definitely an unexpected outcome. He was having faith in God that what God had told him was true. And by faith, it says, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. In other words, he condemned the world because other people didn't believe what he was seeing was true. Then we get to Abraham. And we've already looked a little bit with that with the children too. By faith, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went. We don't really know how Abraham heard God's voice. These are all people who lived before there was any written accounts of how God deals with people. And clearly there must have been some sense of his presence and some hearing of his voice, and some of it was sometimes in dreams, we know. But Abraham obeyed and went even though he didn't know where he was going, as Thomas has eloquently said. That is a big unexpected outcome. It is truly faith to start off on a journey when you don't even know where you're going. And so he made his home like a stranger, it says, in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as we've heard. And he came from a very sophisticated place for that time, Ur of the Chaldees. This was a very sophisticated settlement in around 2000 BC. And He lived in tents rather than build something. But he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. So he looked forward to something different. Then we've got Sarah. And by faith, even Sarah, who was past age, was enabled to bear children because she considered the one who had made the promise was faithful. I want to point out that there were aspects in Abraham's life where he dithered as far as faith was concerned and made some bad decisions, including the one to father Ishmael, which wasn't the best decision in the world. And yet he is honoured for his faith overall. And so it says, from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sands on the seashore. Their faith sure made a difference, because the descendants, quite apart from just Jewish descendants, you might say the religious descendants of Abraham include Christians, Jews and the Islamic people in the Islamic faith. Those are actually more than 50% of the world's population in all. I know not all the Christians are often in name only, and the same with Islam, but they consist of more than half the world's population, Abraham's, if you like, spiritual descendants nowadays. And so the outcome, the difference their faith made, was huge, huge, and it impacts us here. So, let's read verses 13 onwards. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. Abraham did not see a whole nation settled in that area. Noah did receive some of the things promised. He was promised a flood and he got one. But people like Enoch, we don't know what he was promised, but by faith he walked with God and he certainly saw God. But they saw them and welcomed them from a distance, and they admitted they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. I really like the King James version of that verse, that they have no continuing city, but they seek one to come. It's funny thinking a continuing city, isn't it? Because it sounds a bit weird. It sounds like it's one on an one of those flat elevator things. But in fact, of course, there's heaps of not continuing cities. Archaeology shows you that all around the world, including Ur, where Abraham came from. People have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. And in Philippians 3:20, I think it is, Paul says, our citizenship is in heaven. And so, if they'd been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. So, if we are to be these kind of people, like these people in the Hall of Fame, as Thomas was saying, you try to imitate the people in the Hall of Fame. I wouldn't mind being like Bradman, but I can hardly swat a fly, let alone hit a cricket ball. If we want to imitate their faith, what difference does that make? We are not just clinging to an idea, but participating in a present reality that will culminate in sight. As the whole book of Hebrews shows, Christ is the focal point and basis of this reality. That word hypostasis, underpinning, foundation, etc., is also used in Hebrews 1, verse 3, where it says the Son is the hypostasis. The exact representation is the words that we use. We struggle to translate this word. It has such complex meanings. The exact representation of the Father and of God's being. And in chapter 12, in a couple of weeks, we will see that Jesus is the author and perfecter of our faith. And indeed, I gather from my grandchildren in Hope Kids last Sunday that Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, the A and the Z of our faith. Jesus is the center. So faith in the Lord Jesus and being certain of what we confidently expect will mean. And I thought maybe we can think of, if we were writing these verses and going, by faith I will, or by faith, yeah, we shouldn't say it about other people, so we'll say it about I will. And I wrote out a few things. You might like to think of a few things too that apply to you. So what I came up with is, by faith, I will choose an ethical job. Or if I'm an employer, I will pay people fairly. By faith, I will trust that God will take care of me financially. Which is, I've said before, I think, it's a bit of a challenge when you're my age and every second finance page and paper says that we won't have enough to live on in our retirement and all the rest of it. I will trust God. By faith, I will trust God that he will take care of me. If I'm younger, I will trust God for a Christian life partner. By faith, my attitude to material things will be that they are not the ultimate end. There is a much more wonderful life to come. Couldn't help thinking when I was thinking about that, Rupert Murdoch, who's like 94 and really, 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 really rich. And he's still arguing with his kids about where the money's going to go. Well, he hasn't. The court case is over. But and who's going to control what? At 94, what does he think is going to happen in the next X years? Like, what's the end of his life going to be? And he can't take any of those millions with him, billions with him. And he can't control. He's trying to control from afterwards. He's trying to put that control on. That's part of it. Not happy man. By faith, I will choose to obey God in how I relate to people and how I might, things like forgiveness and so on, how that applies to me. By faith, I will organise my money according to God's values. And by faith, I just put it to you, Simon and Lucinda went to Central Asia. Our part of by faith is to support that step of faith. By faith, Colin and Marg, who had a retreat this weekend, went to China. And again, by faith, this fellowship supported them for many years. And by faith, this is quite a hard one to do, isn't it? When a Christian dies, I will not grieve like others who have no hope. And we've had that particularly brought to us in the last month or so with Martri and Jane going to heaven. This life is not the end. By faith, we know we'll see them again. By faith, it makes a huge difference. I really struggle when somebody dies who isn't a Christian. I struggle to know how to write a sympathy card. I've done it, but it's extremely difficult. And so, yes, they were longing for a country of their own and for a better country. They were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. I hasten to say this is not the heavenly one. This is the River Arno in Florence, the most magical day coming into evening, but it's a wonderful picture, isn't it, of what is up ahead. And so, as we've seen, I hope you've seen Hope Matters and the front of it. I have had this... sentence of Augustine's written in my quote book, or yes, written into it many years ago. Faith is to believe what we do not see, and the reward of this faith is to see what we believe. Faith is to believe what we do not see, and the reward of faith is to see what we believe. And Augustine also wrote wonderful little few lines, we shall rest and we shall see and we shall love and we shall praise, behold what shall be in the end and shall not end. Thank you.